You're listening to the Raising Anchor Soccer Show with Matt Entrekin and Jason Carey, your home for news, analysis, and everything going on in FC. Each week, they take you inside the locker room, inside the tactics, and inside the storyline shaping RIFC. Now, here's Matt and Jason.
Another week down, and I don't care what that groundhog saw, Jason. It's another week closer to warmer weather, and we're just 30 days away for Rhode Island FC having its first kickoff of the 2026 season. Gotta ask you, how you been, buddy?
Doing good. Do we still use groundhogs to predict our weather? Is that
absolutely? It's pinnacle of technology. It's peak. Doing it for centuries now. Why stop? Right?
Science has not improved in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, you know, sure, groundhogs are only, what, 39% accurate in their forecasting, but, you know, hey.
Betting men would like those odds, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if there is sports betting that occurs on whether or not the groundhog sees its shadow or not. Do you think that exists? Do you think DraftKings has a line?
That is, like, peak betting degeneracy. It's like, and you know what? I'm here for it. I'm not going to partake in it, but, hey, love it for those people.
Next
as
year.
As long as they're not ruining their...
Their lives over Pawtuxet Phil or whatever his name is. Yeah, no, I don't know about that. Listen, there's a lot to talk about tonight, and I don't even know where to start. I wanted to initially have the conversation just so that we could put it out there in the air. Did you read that article about Adrian Heath getting kidnapped in Tangier, of all places?
Yeah, that was wild. I mean, it just, he's gets a job offer. Apparently, he was not the only person that this has happened to. He was maybe only the only one who's come out with their story because it's still an active investigation. But just to get kidnapped in Morocco, and of all people, like Adrian Heath, like I imagine MLS coaches get paid well, but like it's not like they kidnapped, you know, a billionaire or anything. Like
are you trying to say that Premier League legend and Orlando City, Minnesota United man, Adrian Heath, doesn't have enough money to be warranted to be kidnapped and held hostage for ransom?
I mean, I'm just trying to, like, what do you think he has? Like, a couple mil at best?
What do you think the people that kidnapped him had? It's all relative. Now, here's the question.
I don't know, a family and some guns or whatever.
Here's the question for you. Conor Smith gets a job offer across the pond. Do we need to just make sure he has a detachment, a bodyguard? Or do you think Conor Smith could handle three people kidnapping him at an airport in Morocco?
Yeah, I don't know. He would. It's what's the thing? You're not trapped in here with me or whatever the joke.
I'm not trapped with you.
Yeah, you're trapped with me.
I bet you Conor Smith has scrapped enough times where he could take on three kidnappers at one time. If he had his dog with him, easy peasy. But we are not here to discuss how to kidnap a coach prospect, nevertheless. And I can tell you Conor Smith is not going anywhere anytime soon that we even need to worry about that. Want to get into some of the bigger news. You know, a lot of things are moving right now, right, Jason? Like there's sometimes a little bit of news and sometimes there's a lot of bit of news. Do we need to start with a little bit of news before we move into the bigger pieces of the night?
Just a little thing here. RFC released parking prices.
Oh gosh, don't talk about parking prices.
And I don't know, some people, you know, there were some reactions online, as you know, people do.
What were your thoughts on it? I don't disagree, by the way, for the people that immediately jumped all over the club about saying, oh my gosh, $29 for parking per game, right? So this is the individual parking passes where you can prioritize getting the D, the T, or the L lots before you go to M, or if you want the highly coveted tailgating lot with the M side of parking. People were not necessarily thrilled that parking has gone to $29 a game. You know, do you think this is pricing potential new fans out?
Possibly. I mean, it's an extra kind of variable you have to throw into on top of tickets and concessions. And you know, $29 feels a bit steep considering, you know, the average, you know, unless you're parking at TD Garden or something, you know, I mean, 20 more around closer to 20 feels okay. You know, there'll always be those people who will compare us to other teams maybe down the road who talk about free parking, things like that.
But you can get free parking if you go up and park at the train station lot, right? And then the bus will take you down.
Yeah, no, there's definitely opportunities.
There's ways. I'm not trying to be a homer and like say that the club is innocent here. I mean, obviously, that is not a good look, and it's probably not all entirely the club's fault. I'm sure that the parking lot attendants, the managing company that runs all of that laws or whatever, I'm sure they needed to get a chunk of change to be able to do this. But like, it's not like there aren't those options. And then also, too, the people advocating that they're pricing people out, you know, they're mostly all season ticket members as well that got the better discount, which for those of you that are upset about the price, go get season tickets. You'll spend more in the long term, but you'll save on all that parking ahead of time. But back to it, do you think this prices people out? Because you can get two tickets at $16.36 in the supporter group. That's basically the same price as a parking lot. If the 401 tickets, which I have not heard if those are coming back from Centerville Bank this year, that's five tickets that would cost you one parking spot. So like, you're bringing your entire family, the entire goof troop shows up, but it costs just as much to park the car as it does to just get into the stadium. Is there an opportunity to change that? Like, do you see this being a barrier to entry for new fans or soccer curious fans in the future?
Maybe, but then also in the same vein, maybe this is a good opportunity to try and, you know, like carpool, right? Make some friends, kind of share that cost in that regards. And then from there, I guess we'll kind of see if this is, you know, if the club does feel that it is a prohibitive like barrier for some people, people will tell them.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll, and if it really is, I imagine they'll vote with their wallets, and maybe they'll see a slight drop in attendance, and then they'll have to address it from there.
Yeah, and I mean, the fan surveys come out after every game, so if you do get one of those and you're not happy with it, express your opinions, express your concerns, create suggestions. I always say it's one thing to complain, but if you have an alternate idea, that's always what's going to benefit you and other patrons that come to Centerville Bank Stadium. I'm curious. You know, we haven't really talked about parking a lot this year. We the fiasco that was last year, that the plan was released too late and nobody knew where were we going to tailgate. They also kind of haven't really released that. And like, while I don't imagine things are necessarily changing because we still have the Apex site, it also has been, you know, there's been those bids out there to change what Apex could be. We also know where the T2 and the T3 lots are right next to the stadium. That's eventually going to be additional development. When do these things happen, and should we anticipate we're going to have even less parking in the 2027 season? Like, they'd want to get it ahead, you know, done before USL premiere, I would imagine, so that it doesn't look, you know, all wonky on how we're trying to get in and out of the stadium. But from what we've been told, there will still be tailgating and the Defiance lot will still remain unchanged. That could still change. That's not 100% like locked in, but we haven't heard anything that would move. But like, what does that mean for the larger picture? Because eventually fans are going to have to find even new ways to be creative to get to the stadium.
I imagine this is one of those cases that things will remain the same until they communicate otherwise. There's still a lot of moving pieces when it comes to the development. There's a lot of the stuff that's going to happen around the river itself. There's some extra buildings and whatnot. There's at some point supposed to be a pedestrian bridge that's going to get built. Not that, you know, they're in charge of that. That's supposed to be, you know, from the state or whatever, but there's still a lot of moving pieces. I think they probably just don't have the answers to communicate anything effectively at this point. So I think things are just going to stay the same until they let us know.
Until they don't.
Until they don't. Yeah.
Those homeowners that live right down the street off of Taft, they're going to be raking in the dough when those parking lots get more and more tight, more exclusive. Cause right now, like, we drive by so early, I don't know if anyone uses those parking lots. Like, I am not quite sure. They don't charge typically more than what the stadium would charge. In fact, now that I think about it, I think we saw $20 offerings on those house parkings. That could be cheaper and get you there closer than the premium spot. So you're hearing it here. You may want to, on the first game, investigate on what that could look like. Maybe you can get a contract going with the homeowners and say, hey, like, save us a spot for every single game. We'll pay you in advance and we'll be all taken care of. Look at that, stimulating the economy in the city of Pawtucket. I we'll see what happens. But again, lots of stuff going on this week, both with the pricing points of the parking, and then they kind of got raked over the coals for the pricing of that lunch event where they did the same thing last year. It's again, nothing new, but like, people are like, $85 to go to a lunch-a-thon to meet coach. I'll just wait for the autograph
alley.
Doesn't
that include a ticket to a match, though, too?
It does include it. But see, here's the thing. What audience are you targeting, right? Because if you're trying to get new fans, then that's great, but that's a really high entry to the show, so to speak. If you're a season ticket member, you normally will find ways to have access to the players, to the coaches, to the technical staff, to the movers and shakers of Rhode Island FC at some point in the season, multiple times, really, if you think about it, just on how accessible and available the players are and the coaches are. So, like, what are you really getting out of that price point? And then you don't really need the ticket because you are already a season ticket member. So lots of different things there. Again, it's not wrong. And we rewrote on the tweet. It's not for everybody. It's cool to see them do it. They got to continue to build those relationships within the community. And if you're curious, go have fun. But also, like, because there's so little news going on, people are just, like, locking in on really small things and tearing them apart because they have nothing else to do. Like, people are desperate.
They're too excited. They don't know what to do with their hands, so they just rage them online.
I mean, we're going to talk about it later, about the preseason results and how people have, you know, been privately and publicly, like, going, we demand answers from you, Matt, because you know things and you must share your secrets.
You don't have the answers?
I sometimes have answers, Jason. Sometimes I have suspicions and speculation like everybody else. And sometimes I try to blend the two together into a beautiful cacophony that is Raising Anchor Soccer Show. Want to get into this. We teased it last week. Soccer is now number 3 in American sports consumption, I should say, as well as viewership and fan interest overall. What are we thinking about this? It's edging out baseball now at 10% of the total market capture. Instagram has also further confirmed that. So originally it was just the Economist data. Instagram is showing that in some of their data that they're tracking and whatnot. So now it's kind of like it's getting a little more serious that truly soccer has now outpaced and eclipsed Major League Baseball. Do we think that this is real? Is there any suspicion behind these numbers, or is this the real deal in your eyes?
I imagine it's the real deal. In terms of viewership, you know, baseball has a lot of loyal fans, but let's be honest, like watching on TV, especially when there's 162 games, can be kind of a little boring. I enjoy going to games myself, but I'm not going to sit down and watch a game. I think the only caveat I would put on this is they just say soccer. And I think there's still a big opportunity for the viewership to be directed to American soccer. I bet if we broke this down, a lot of this is people watching the Premier League, people watching Liga MX, or, you know, whatever kind of, you know, viewership that they maybe or have affinity towards their country of origin. So people are watching a lot of foreign European and South American soccer, but how much of that is actually, you know, split up between MLS and USL?
Are you trying to tell me that MLS and USL are not carrying their weight in the consumption of soccer in our country?
I mean, I think there's a big reason why we're pushing towards a Premier League or Premier Division, I should say, and a promotion relegation. I think we're really trying to capture what people like, the essence of true soccer or football, if you will, in the league, because too many people look at MLS and just think that it is, you know, a bunch of billionaires like buying aging European stars.
And hey, I mean, that has been the working model for at least 10 years of Major League's existence. Hashtag not an MLS soccer show. But you are right. I mean, the soccer sickos, they know this, that this isn't trend setting for soccer to continue to outpace. There's a couple of things to it, though. Spot on about the international augmentation of this, right? You're looking at soccer, and comparatively, if you run it up against, you know, football, NFL, NBA, and MLB as the other, you know, big three of that top four, they don't benefit from the international game. There are leagues that are in Europe and other places across the world, but they don't have the same traction, or they don't overshadow what the American product is. So it's kind of like soccer is playing a little bit with house money in that regard, because as it continues to grow, it has these bigger markets to kind of say, hey, look at us. Like, if you're interested in that, come this way, and vice versa. To me, that kind of feels like the infinite money glitch of you can anticipate at some point that soccer could continue to grow even more. I don't know if it gets to the NBA or to the NFL levels. I think maybe not in our lifetime, certainly not mine. But there's also another element to it besides just the international part. When I did some of the digging into the Economist's numbers, they also put a big kind of target on the responsibility that youth soccer and youth involvement has played in the evolution of soccer as it's kind of taken that next step on the pedestal or on the podium. I didn't realize this. Soccer has outpaced every youth sport by over 19.5%. In consideration of their involvement, their programming, the ability to play. And that doesn't even include how we know it gets more rigged the higher up in competitive nature you get with, like, you know, tournament clubs, specialty clubs, getting into youth academies that are sponsored or have connections to professional outlets. Like, just playing AYSO soccer has a better reach rate than access to sports like, you know, NFL or contact football, basketball, and baseball. And, like, part of me thinks it's the equipment part. Like, it's a lot cheaper to play soccer at those levels than it is any other sport. But then after that, it's the audiences after they kind of get out of their youth phase from 16 to 24, they're completely outpacing every single sport category, including the NFL. 35% of audiences aged 16 to 24 are only interested right now in watching soccer as a sport. Like, to me, it almost feels like that we always talk about that next generation, that next generation's coming. It feels like it may be here now. And as baseball tries to hold on to it, you know, I mean, they call it, you know, America's pastime. Like, it's really interesting to see. And then, ironically, so there's the youth that feeds it. There's the international game. And then in the international, tying into that, immigration. We are not talking about immigration on this show. Those of you that know us know where we stand. But interestingly enough, as we have immigrants come into this community and into this country, they bring their love of the sport with them, like you kind of said a second ago. So, you know, I anticipate seeing, especially in the World Cup cycle, where we always have that debate of, like, okay, you're an American, but, you know, your dad's third generation Italian, your mom's second generation Portuguese, or you've got family connections or roots to Guatemala. Which team do you root for? Like, that's the ethos of, like, why fans become attracted to the sport of soccer, whether it is the MLS consumption or one of those international leagues. So it's exciting to see, but, like, I kind of got to ask, like, do we think NBA is at risk at some point? I mean, the market share is like 35, I think it was 35% NFL, 17 to 19% NBA, and then now 10% of soccer, with baseball at 9%. Like, what is that reach rate between when we see, you know, Lionel Messi leave the sport? Do we see a deduction or a degradation? And then when do we see us pass NBA, or if ever?
I think we're still a ways away from that. I think the growth potential is there. I'll be really curious to see how things go over the next 4 or 5 years post World Cup, right? And then as we get into this Premier Division, promotion, relegation, what kind of interest does this bring? Does that in any way, shape, or form change any of what MLS is doing? They're switching to the European calendar, which will benefit them for selling players to European clubs. But does that do anything for them in terms of viewership? That I don't know. It remains to be seen. So, two big changes coming up to the two big leagues here in the U.S. So I think it's going to be at least an exciting time to kind of see how that pans out and if these kind of bets pay off for them.
We'll have to see. But when we return, we've got preseason updates and results to share as the team continues to prepare down at the IMG Academy in Florida, all here on the Raising Anchor Soccer Show. Thank you for listening to tonight's broadcast powered by SproutCoworking.com. For all your business needs, large or small, visit SproutCoworking.com. Powering 990 WBOB, that's SproutCoworking.com. Now, let's get back to the Raising Anchor Soccer Show on 990 WBOB with Matt Entrekin and Jason Carey. I'm going to enjoy when that read is built into the promo video and I don't have to just say it here in front of us live. That's going to be an exciting time. But let's get into this preseason. A lot of people asking questions. Some people kind of already know some of these answers because everyone wants to know what was the outcome of that Sporting Jax result last weekend. So let's talk about it and, you know, let's get through it. I want to also address some gatekeeping. We were called out, I think more specifically Mia, that we have a responsibility as media to the fans to share everything and anything, I should say. But that's not always how it works, right?
What am I gatekeeping?
Well, you're gatekeeping the fact that I'm gatekeeping and you're not letting me tell people
I'm gatekeeping your gatekeeping.
Gatekeeption, as they say. Listen, I'm just going to set the record because I think it's important for the fans to understand that we do know usually a lot of things. I would say we are probably the most well-informed individuals within the soccer community, but that comes sometimes. That comes with a responsibility. I would say 90% of the time we know things that we either are allowed to disseminate or things that we can't ever share. And then sometimes I've told stories many months, many years later about things that have happened within this club's organization where it's an appropriate time. It's not it's not groundbreaking. It's not those moments. And like, I just want to make sure people understand, especially our fans, that we always have to toe a fine line when it comes to what we are allowed to share. As you and I have built friendships, relationships, and professional connections in this hobby of ours, let's call it that, there comes a responsibility that when people say things, especially when they start with the conversation with off the record, it truly means off the record. And I cannot tell you how many times people have come up to me and they go, hey, I really want to tell you something, but I'm like really afraid you're going to like say something. And I always look at them and go, one, our record is spotless. We've never shared anything we're not allowed to share. And two, you have legal power over us by just saying off the record, and we cannot, or we face massive, massive legal, you know, opportunities or legal exposure to risk and all that. And so that always kind of like just confuses me. But then the other part of it too is sometimes people will say things to us, and we know that if we share that, we are going to damage our relationship with said source. And so it's really important for us to decide when it's appropriate to tell people things and when we just need to keep our mouths shut. And I promise you all, we do the best we can to always tell people everything we can. But there was a big surprise this week when we went from the Revs 2 game, which we didn't even break the news. We found out through our friends and counterparts at the Blazing Musket and Josh Nye what the results were. We got a little bit extra information, which we were able to talk about on last week's show. But then when this result came in, we couldn't get it confirmed by anyone other than official sources, which wouldn't let us share it. So when we're bound by that we can't share it, we have to find other people that have been told it, that were either not supposed to be told it and it slipped, or we have to find it in ways where people are willing to go on the record and share it. So while we knew the result of the game, it wasn't our story to tell. And so I just want to make sure people are aware that, like, whenever we say something, we always, one, want to make sure it's as accurate as possible, at least in news. Like, sometimes I say stupid things on tactics and formations, and I get that wrong all the time. I get flamed for it in the Discord and in private messages. I'll live that life as long as possible. But when it comes to news, if you don't hear something from us, it's not that we don't want to tell you, or that we think that we can hold it over you as like some like, haha, look at us. It's often we can't tell you because we haven't found a way where we can legally do it. And so I just wanted to preface that. There's a couple of other things that go into it. And I don't know, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but like, do you want to also talk about some of the things we've been exposed to where it's like there's other reasons beyond just our own professional standards?
It's so funny that we're even like,
it's not the thing,
like wasting time talking
not,
about
it's
this.
Not, so like, I will be clear. You may think, because I didn't talk to you pre-show, that this is just that one particular individual who I know will be listening to this. There were actually four other people who reached out on Twitter and personally said, hey, like, why aren't you telling us these scores? Because once that conversation got out there, they were like, hey, we feel obligated to know, like, why aren't, like, what's the deal behind it?
Oh, yeah, I know our fan base well enough to know that there's plenty of people who, you know, are just chomping at the bit to get information.
They are so desperate. There's so little out there right now.
And so it's just important to note here that there, like you mentioned, there's a lot of moving parts here. Sometimes there are things like, and if we're going to stay on the topic of like preseason games, sometimes the other club doesn't want us to report, you know, or like they don't want RFC or they don't want us or anybody reporting that match. And so there could be a lot of different reasons for that. I'm not going to get into all of that. There could be a lot of like scenarios that could put RFC in trouble for giving out this information. You know, because they have certain agreements with certain people, similar to the same thing you were talking about, where we have certain relationships with certain people. We know certain information to maybe kind of help us do our job, if you will, to the best of our ability. But we can't always provide the whys or the hows behind some of this information. And it's you know, relationships. And I think anyone who has been in a professional setting where you maybe are privy to information from your job that you don't just go around telling people because it's a need to know type of basis.
Especially like the trialists, like we've had players come in that you would not believe the names of some of the people we've had try out for this team. And if that got out, people would be like, well, why didn't you go sign them? Well, maybe they were just getting like they were staying, you know, crisp. They were staying warm for a potential team somewhere else. Maybe they just wanted to see if there was a good fit there. And so they were invited into one, you know, game, one combine, one training session. And it's the same for the other team. You know, like right now, that supporting Jack side, they want to probably keep things really close to the chest because they're a new expansion side and they're not, you know, they're stumbling through it, so to speak, as they try to figure out their identity here in this year one. So we're just going to get out of, we've got that out there now. We promise we'll always try to be what we can and forthcoming with what we know. But like, if we don't, please stop harassing us about things. Like, you want to talk about things, we love you guys for that. But like, if we don't say it, I don't need to wake up to five DMs in a morning and go like, hey, like, you know, one was a paragraph long, one was just, you know, WTF, like, why aren't you telling us things? It could have been one person's, you know, five spam Someone. Accounts, but like, either way.
Just makes alts just to flame you online.
Some people need to have a timeout for themselves. But let's get into what we know about the Sporting Jacks game, because that's what people really want to care about, Jason, and that's what they're here to listen to. So want to start with the Frank Nodarce goal. That was the thing that kind of tipped people off that we saw at least one goal in the result. It was leaked later that it was a 2-1 result. We can confirm that that was the score at the conclusion of that match against Sporting Jacks. Want to ask you quickly, did you see the video of Nodarce's goal?
Yeah, it was good to, I think the one thing to note when we kind of take a look at that video, kind of looks like we're playing a 3-5-2 again. So I love the, you know, or 3-4-3 version of something like that. You know, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Maybe that could bode well for the start of the season, at least.
No, Darcy, on the left side of that formation, though, too, that immediately also had me scratching my head, because I started moving the pieces on the board like, okay, wait. Whether he came in the second half or the first half, he's now swapping for Sanchez because there's too much competition on the right. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, also sometimes with not in a video, was he out of position from a set piece or something? And it was like, you know, who knows? We'll figure that out when we get there. But yeah, interesting to see him over there.
The important thing is that he scored a goal, and we need more of those here in this third season for Rhode Island FC. And then we can also tell you that we were able to confirm that Leo Afonso scored the additional goal. So that is great to see, because one, we get one of our new strikers who I think is going to play a much larger role, Jason, on this squad than we first maybe thought when we still, you know, we're assuming we had Chico on the team. It's good to see him already getting the reps in there, because that is only going to more quickly solidify a place for him. Now, interestingly, when he did his interview that we listened to last week, you know, he told the reporter from Moonsocket that, you know, oh, I only need like 3 days and I'm like integrated, I'm gelled. I kind of am starting to believe it, because, you know, if he's already finding those opportunities again against a new but still championship level of competitor, like, that's an exciting prospect to see. So I guess, you know, now that we've seen Leo score goals, Frank seems like he's back. We're back, right? Like, we're preseason, like, we are the number one team in the Eastern Conference once more, right?
I would put a caveat on that and just say it's preseason. I mean, didn't the Cleveland Browns famously win all of their preseason games before going 0-16? So obviously that's not going to happen to us, but it's not always a great indicator. So it's exciting to see to hear that the team's scoring some goals. I'm looking forward to seeing some more 3-5-2, 3-4-3, something like that. But I'm not going and running, placing bets on us getting first or anything just yet.
Absolutely. Now, there are two other updates that we do need to bring. And, you know, people, I want everyone sitting down for this, okay? Because this is kind of things we know, but things we need to find out more about. And I'm surprised we haven't gotten more questions about that in all reality versus the score and who scored the goals. Noticeably absent, and we kind of hinted at this and alluded during the Revolution 2 game, that Koke was MIA for that Revs 2 match. Now, at the time, no one would confirm if it was an injury, if it was a sickness or illness, or like if he just had a dentist appointment that day, or the baby was sick and, like, you know, he couldn't make it to the game, right? We still have not heard word on Koke down at training. We have not heard anything about him from him, or we haven't seen him in any of the promotional stuff that's being taken, both like the pictures that end up posted, but then also like the player videos, like Zach's birthday. Koke is notoriously absent right now, and so that starts having me think, like, where is the captain? You know, we've seen him be injured for stints at a time in both last season and the year before. It makes me a little concerned, and so while we don't yet have a confirmation on his status, and I'm hoping we'll find that out very quickly, especially at the next media day practice when they come back from Florida, I guess I'll ask you, and it almost might not matter because he may be just, you know, on the mend and like just had the sniffles, or it could be something more serious. But if it is more serious, Jason, how much of the, your hopes and dreams of having a strong start to the season get crushed with Koke being out at the beginning of the season?
Not necessarily a good way to start the season.
Is this Jackson Lee cursing us as he left?
I guess the only thing, if I want to try and find a silver lining, is that if we say like Koke has to have one injury a year, are we getting it out of the way like right away? And then maybe he just misses a few weeks and boom, he's right back in.
You know, I don't think I hate that. I don't think I hate that. But if there is an injury to it, and again, there's a big preface on if here, guys, lots of big role responsibility for Jacob Castro to quickly step up, because again, he's new to a squad that's been pretty much in place for a very long time. So big shoes to fill if he has to immediately step in and be the surrogate Jackson Lee to this team. So we'll find out more. We will track that as that story develops. But then the other one that no one has seemed to catch on to yet, Pitty. Augustine Rodriguez has not yet been seen at any of the pictures or any of the things going on camp. Now, I know he was not available for media day. He was not there for the medical check-in up until when the team left to IMG. At that time, when I asked, like, oh, where is he? I wanted to see some pictures and get some documentation on him as far as like what his story could be. We wanted to do an interview. One, he doesn't speak English very well or at all, to my knowledge. And so that wasn't going to work. Jason, I'm going to need you to step up big time with your Duolingo skills over there. But two, he wasn't here yet. And they were alluding to that it was more of like he's on his way. There was visa. It's all the ITC transfer stuff of like getting a player in, making sure they check all the boxes, dot all the I's, cross all the T's. So I just had chalked it up to like, oh, he's on his way. He's inbound, but like there's just a visa opportunity for them to get fixed. I have not yet seen him. And you would think they've already posted pictures on every single one. They always get the new guys. So you've seen Leo, you've seen Jacob, and you've seen Scardina. Have not yet seen a single picture of Pitty somewhere in that. That doesn't mean he's not there or that he hasn't already shown up. But it's interesting that our other major signing of the season has not yet been seen inside the Rhode Island FC training camp. So that has me questioning things as well, but we'll have to see where that goes.
We got 30 days, so there's still time. Hopefully they can get that paperwork squared away so he can get a little bit of preseason time. You know, in past seasons, we saw instances where, like, you know, we signed Chico so late that he didn't have an opportunity to really, you know, train with the squad, or even instances where, like, players were basically like injured right off the bat, like Ugo last year, where we didn't see him till like halfway through the year. So you would hope that he can get in there and kind of at least have a week or two with the team before we actually just kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah. So RFC front office, if you could just put a picture out of the status of Pitty, wherever he is, whether it's on an airplane, like maybe he's doing the James Rodriguez, he's sitting on a private jet somewhere, pondering his next, you know, where he's going to land in America, or just show pictures of him practicing so we can put that to bed, but have not yet seen or heard of his participation. So want to see that happen as quickly as possible.
Yeah, but we're going to take a quick break here. When we return, you've got questions, we have some answers. The mailbag is up here next on the Raising Anchor Soccer Show.
Fans, as the weather becomes more and more unpredictable, be sure to check out 990 WBOB's weather page for all your temperature, storm, and travel info. Stay prepared for whatever Mother Nature has in store with the 990 WBOB weather page. Now, let's get back to the Raising Acre Soccer Show on 990 WBOB with Matt Entrekin and Jason Carey. I'm so excited for the intro and the ads for next week. We have a big surprise. A really great special interview. A special guest will be on the show next week, and really excited for that. We did the recording yesterday, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But I will not spoil that until it shows up. And in the meantime, we've got lots of premiere talk from last week with USL's big announcement. I don't think it's a big surprise that the majority of the questions that have been coming in to the mailbag, and thank you for everyone, by the way, who was still writing in questions in the off season. I especially appreciate, I think his name was Philip, where he just wrote, "How dare you?" I assume it wasn't doing a show and it was more taking time off. But we scraped because of the time that we have in the shortened format, we have to kind of scrape, I don't want to say the best of the questions, but the ones at least that we can answer with some flair. And so we'll experiment depending on the variety and the length of questions. If we still continue to get a lot moving forward, we may do like a YouTube after hours or after dark, where for the podcast viewers, like, we'll just continue on. But then if you're listening on the, like, if you're not listening live, I should say, then you'll have to go back to YouTube and get like the extended one if you want to hear your questions, or or just, you know, see us talk more.
Cut, the Zack Snyder cut.
Yeah, the Zack. Like we just needed the Zack Snyder cut. But let's get into this nevertheless. Rachel M. writes in this first question, Jason, if the USL Premier starts with only 12 to 14 teams, does that mean the national table format can't really crown a fair winner of the Supporter Shield? Doesn't that mean we'll have to still be playing in an unbalanced schedule?
So what if we have, let's say, 14 teams, just the higher, then you'd have 26 games, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you could fill the void with just like, oops, all Prinks Cup games. Like there's definitely some options there. And
like an almost an intra league cup for just the Premier.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But
I don't think they would do another cup for the fill. I think they would just
not just do another cup, just have more cup games.
I don't think they do that, because then if the cup's supposed to be the bridge between USL One, USL Championship and Premier, I think they're just going to expand the games, and they're going to have, I think Rachel's onto something. I think they're going to have to abandon, at least at the beginning, until they get to a 20 team league, they're going to have to abandon the idea that the top notch wins outright. We already know American playoffs. You're going to have to have playoffs for a Premier Cup. But I think you're just going to play in games where it's what, like 12 teams. Let's say 12 teams, by the way. I don't even have faith that we'll have 14 on the first year of USL Premier. Then that would be 22 games. And so then you would be seeing actually in reality, there's 34 in season now, right? With the addition of Prinks Cup. So you've got to get to an additional 11-ish games. That's almost six away, six home. A couple teams get unlucky, a couple teams get lucky. I think they're just going to be playing every opponent in the Premier three times, and it'll be an alternate for that third game. I don't see how they do it any less. And then it gets even wonkier as they sprinkle more teams in through the expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the unfortunate reality of the immediate expansion, but we just got to look at the long-term goal. Also, Prinks Cup just doesn't flow the same way Jägermeister Cup does.
No, we need like a Modelo. We need another alcohol sponsoring that cup. I don't even think we can get Prinks tires in New England. I don't think they're rated for the harsher weather, because that's like a, I think it's like a Chinese company that mostly sells them to like Florida and the Midwest. I've never seen a Prinks tire. If you've seen a Prinks tire, let me know. Listeners, send me photos of your Prinks tires.
I can't eat or drink a Prinks tire, so I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do.
I bet you we can make that happen, buddy. I bet you we can make that happen.
Rich W, NCFC fan coming in peace. You mentioned how you didn't see a path forward for NCFC to return to be one of the expansion teams. Those for those who don't know the acronym, maybe new, that's North Carolina Football Club. Can you share what would be the case when other teams are returning from the dead, like OKC Energy and maybe the new Reno team?
Rich, your copium, your hopium is strong. And I respect you for that. And I also respect that you're listening to the show. Thank you. I hope we didn't if we inherited you when we beat you, like, I'm all for it. Welcome to the family. If you're just listening because you need USL content in the absence of the season, that, more power to you again. I hear what he's saying, right? He's basically saying, hey, like, We're putting it on the shelf. We're going to bring it back when D1 happens. Why is this any different from Oklahoma City Energy? Which, again, maybe even our fans, because OKC wasn't even around when we started. They were a team that had been a part of the USL Championship before we entered into the league. They went on hiatus. Their hiatus is a little different, though, because if I remember correctly, they had stadium configuration issues. So it wasn't a lack of appetite to fund the team or fan attendance or product. I think the field was actually not meeting the qualifications of what the USL needed from a standardization when they went to D2, like professional sanctioned. If I remember, there was something about the dimensions of the stadium, which is why they've spent all this time trying to get the state and the city behind funding their new stadium, which they now have all of that approved and greenlit. And so that's why they'll be coming back here, I think, in 2027 at this point now. So that's a little different, right? Like, they didn't have the ambition of like, oh, we're going to move to D1 by waiting it out. They just needed to get back into the league. And then by the unfortunate circumstance of time, that's why they're now here in this opportunity. So I think that's a little different. And then there's no guarantee that OKC will go into Premier. It's just a potential opportunity. Reno's another one. Again, Reno folded I think back in 20, I don't think they made it through COVID. I think they were one of the teams, but they have not been in existence for a while. And it's the same thing. Like, they had stadium issues, leasing problems. They now have a site downtown in Reno, whereas before I think they were on like the outskirts. Different in like different group of investors, maybe some of the continued ones, but different project plan. Again, they just want to keep soccer in that city, different from North Carolina. Again, Steve Malik with North Carolina just doesn't want to play for the next 2 years, and then he wants to come back immediately and play at a different level. It's not the same. It's apples to oranges.
There's also stadium issues there with them too. They want some public funding, from what I understand, for the stadium. They want it closer to downtown as opposed to all the way out in Cary. So there's just a lot of roadblocks for them. Obviously, I don't want to see any projects fail. Love to have them back to be able to drive down there again and you know, see them. But I just see a lot more hurdles for that team to get to the finish line.
Yeah, and if I remember right, Malik tried to sell the Courage. And when he lost the MLS bid, when they went to Charlotte instead, he seemed like the guy that like just takes his ball and like, wants to go.
That's almost
home.
One of those question marks too, in regards to like ownership. Does he have the capital to really push this project all the way to the Premier?
That I don't think so. Yeah. We'll have to find out. But that's a good question. Rich, I think it was Rich, right? Yeah, Rich. Yeah. So we'll stay, you know, close to it, but I still don't think North Carolina's coming back. I don't mean to hurt your heart there, guy, but I just don't see it. Pedro R. writes in, people always talk about MLS buying or merging USL, but do you ever see a chance of USL and the Canadian Premier League merging?
That, I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of a weird thing anyway to have another country's like teams mixed in, especially like the logistics, right? We're already talking about how in what the future of was it USL League One, how they're going to be like hyper specific in terms of there's just going to be a bunch of, you know, regional playoffs. All of a sudden gaining up to the Premier, if we're imagining that we're going to like absorb them into that, doesn't immediately mean that all of a sudden there's just like flight money to fly all over the place. There's still some kind of growing pains that this league will have to go through. And then, you know, chalking like even crazier weather conditions that, you know, obviously we're not moving to that calendar, but that does mean some of the early months still don't have opportunities for, you know, random blizzards.
Yeah, no, I mean, shout out first and foremost to the Ottawa Fury, the last Canadian USL pro team. And then I saw this, or I wonder if this is the same person who was talking about it on Reddit, because I saw someone talk about the Canadian acquisition idea. And then someone also said, yeah, we would be the perfect league if we were Canada, America, and Puerto Rico. And I was like, I don't know if I have the heart to tell this person Puerto Rico is a part of America, whether they enjoy that fact or not, or you know, the land side of America really wants to recognize Puerto Rico. They absolutely need to be a state. But I also know that the Puerto Rico Islanders were a team for USL at one point too. So it would be fun to see that. But like, if we brought in Canada, and like even if we found like a Mexican league, we could do, then we'd just be NASL because we'd be the North American Soccer League. So I don't see that vision. But I also never will see MLS buying USL. I think the price tag is going to get too expensive. Like, they should have done that 4 years ago, like right after COVID, as everything was hurting. MLS should have just, you know, bought, you know, bit the bullet and bought it out. Now, I think while it will never compete directly, I don't think it's a price tag MLS will want to pay.
Yeah, I don't really see what benefit it has to MLS outside of just trying to like squash us out.
Right, right. Buy it to then shut it up, right?
Yeah. Alan P here says, last week you mentioned which teams could make the leap to Premier, but that still creates a void for about 3 to 5 more teams to immediately make the jump to the championship. Who makes the cut?
Oh, man. Yeah, we did not talk about that. We were so focused on us going into Premier. From what I know, I think the best candidates, and I'm only going to go from a facility perspective because I don't know the ownership. I don't know the level of investment. And I don't care about sporting product because that can change from season over season. I think Union Omaha, because they have their stadium build design, and that will make them on par with some of the lower championship clubs. Greenville Triumph is also doing a stadium. So those two, AC Boise has their stadium coming online with the team as they debut this year. So I would say if we were at three, I think those three would be an immediate lock on. Hearts of Pine is a brand. It's a lifestyle. So like
if they continue to sell out that stadium, I think that will maybe put them in a good position to kind of make that jump at some point.
I agree. The only if I had to, I would still put them at the bottom of the five, and I would put actually AV Ulta out in California because they play in a former minor league baseball field that has been permanently converted. I'm talking like the stands, the infrastructure, everything. It's been converted into a soccer specific stadium. So I would say I would put AV Ulta again from a stadium infrastructure piece alone, I'd put them above Hearts of Pine. If Hearts of Pine is only ever going to play at Fitzpatrick, I don't know how long term that can be sustained, right? Like they're going to have to eventually figure out a home of their own or make major enhancements to Fitzpatrick to adjust for the demand. I mean, apparently every game sells out, so it'll be interesting to see. Do you have a team that you think I'm missing? Like is One Knox, is Spokane up there? Should they be on top somehow and I'm missing it?
No, I think those are all good shouts. Those are definitely teams that I would have brought up as well.
All right. Ben S. writes in, with preseason ongoing, should we be expecting any other signings? Or is this squad the one we're rocking with to start the year off and reinforcements will come in season?
I mean, Kano would always say the roster build is never complete. And I mean, if we look at previous years, it almost feels like there is a vision of what you want. And then as you kind of go throughout the year, you maybe realize there's maybe either something you overlooked, something didn't pan out the way you want it to be. Maybe there's just injuries. So I'd imagine there's definitely some reinforcements that will happen mid-year. As for right now, you know, I don't know any rumors myself. I don't know if
there are none. I'll help you out, buddy. There are none. To my knowledge, there is no other player addition that they are planning. Maybe a trialist or someone they've invited down as a last minute. Could be an amazing like fit and they're going to potentially pull a trigger, but there's no players that they had with intent to sign that they will be surprising us with more signings. And I mean, if you look at it, we're at 22 players right now. At the beginning of last season, we started with 23, and considering how many were injured from the beginning of that, we had two players get loaned out and then we made five acquisitions along the way. So it's not like it's not possible, but I think this is the number that we have from the, you know, from the get-go. Now, if Sebastian Legette wants to join this team, I will put people into positions where they need to sign him immediately. but other than that, like I just don't see it. So when we return for the final segment of the show, we'll discuss early predictions for the 2026 season, all here on the Raising Anchor Soccer Show. Now, let's get back to the Raising Anchor Soccer Show on 990 WBOB with Matt Entrekin and Jason Carey. A little slow on that button over there, buddy, but we're working through it. It's all fun for the production side of things. Let's get into these early estimates and kind of wrap it up with this final question here.
Yeah, last one here from Will S. He was listening to SoccerWise's annual over-under podcast. What is your over-under for RAFC?
I'm assuming we're not talking like a playoff cutoff line. I'm assuming we're talking last year's total points. And then will they do better than that? Because over under for me on a sports betting line is point accumulation or goal accumulation. Like, so I'm assuming for the sake of the argument that we're going to say, will Rhode Island FC do better or worse than last season? Right. I think, you know, I mean, my heart says, yes, of course, they will do over. This is an over all the way. This is the easiest question we can answer of the night. I think when you get into the minutia of it, like, let's look at the two seasons in comparison. 2024, 51 points. 2025, 37 points. Major drop-off, by the way, Jason, in playoff form across the league. And I blame that on Lou and Charleston just running away with the table last year.
Just hoarding all of the points.
Hoarding all of those points.
It's like, how many pot of greed cards do they have?
So, but when I did look at like the last 4 years average, and 40 is about the right line to be in playoff contention. Right? That may change with the expansion of a couple more teams and the quality, but like assuming 40 is it, we really shouldn't have gotten into the playoffs with 37 points historically when you look at the data. And, you know, I said a second ago, I do believe over, but I also want to back it up with a couple of other things. One, I don't know how this team could get much worse. I mean, obviously there is always an opportunity or an ability for that to happen. But like, when you think about it, a majority of the players last year had their worst offensive production season in their careers, right? Like, it was not good for a majority of our players. Defensively, we know how amazing they were. But if you had taken just two of our players and doubled their output, we would have been a fifth or fourth place team by the amount. And I did look at this. If we had gotten just double goal scores out of anyone in our bracket, whether it was JJ at four or, you know, Joe Brito at one, if we had just times it by two, we would have gotten at least 9 points potentially out of the table. That's how many points were left on the floor, so to speak. I looked back, we had 15 games, Jason, that were the difference was one goal. Whether we would have, you know, scraped back one, we would have clawed back just a single point for a draw, or we would have won the game outright. 15 matches. So, like, when you think about it, like, this team has always been close. They've always been tight in the spaces, tight in the margins. So I think our defense isn't going to get any worse. At least I don't think so, because we haven't really lost anyone that would make me suspicious of that. And while I'm still waiting and seeing on the offensive side of things on these players that we've signed and like how this will all work out better, I think if we just have two of these players at a minimum do a little bit better, like if Frank gets back to six goals and Noah gets back to like a 10 goal assist season, we should be in essence a strong contender for a top team in the Eastern Conference.
Absolutely. The only thing I would say, a caveat to the like the over-under thing, when we look at 2024, remember we were playing, what, 34-game season? So we lost four. So getting to that now actually is, you know, absolutely still achievable. But we've lost 12 points off the available table. So that's the one thing I would take into consideration here.
That's fair. And also, too, like, and I know people don't like being held to this, but we also played our first 7-8 games away. Right. Like, really, it's going to be an interesting spotlight to see how this team performs in that first leg of the season.
Under a foot of snow. It's going to be crazy. I mean, yeah, we agreed, I think, that, you know, year four, maybe we'd stop making some guesses on outcomes since we never really got that right. But
I didn't even look back at the competition. Like, I just like, we are not right, because you don't want to predict a loss.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the point of this? So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But so at this point, like, what are our realistic expectations for RIFC this season? Like, where do we think this kind of team lines up at the end of the year?
Where do you want to start?
I mean, obviously Open Cup, you know, historic competition. You know, we have CD Filens in right in our view here. I think most people think that we'd be able to get through them. But then from there, we have other rounds. What I mean,
so we again, like, let's think, we have Filens, and then we have either the winner of Vermont Green and Hearts of Pine, or potentially the winner of Motown and Hartford. So I think we, it depends on who the winner of that second round is that we face. Most likely we will have to play away. I think it comes, like, if it's Hartford, I don't think Hartford is the same animal they were last year, right? Like, I think that will all change, but then we always know that team will show up in a big way. Hearts of Pine have like a just something on their back right now when it comes to Rhode Island FC. Like, they want a crack at us again. They are not happy that they didn't get any points from us in the first two professional outings that we had against each other. They could be a very difficult team. There's something magical about Vermont Green, and so I'm not going to discount Motown. I think we get through the first two rounds and then run into the Revolution again, is what my feeling is. Do you think we get past the Revolution? Apparently they're doing really well, according to the preseason, which, again, does not matter.
Yeah, apparently they've spent like the fourth most money out of all the teams in MLS or something.
Kraft got his FIFA World Cup payout. So
so that'll be tough to say. I mean, I think maybe if it was a home game, you know, and we're in good form, I wouldn't put it past us to make it a really difficult match.
Oh, I want to go play at Gillette on grass. I want to play on that new grass they're laying down. It'll be the first and only time that we ever get that opportunity. But do you think we get out of the round of 32 in third stage?
I think that's probably, unfortunately, where we may suffer.
Okay.
There.
All right. Well, then I'll ask you, Prinks Cup. We've got Westchester home, Hearts of Pine away, Brooklyn FC home, Hartford away. Where are we looking in that one?
I think we have a good opportunity here again. You know, Brooklyn FC is kind of a wild card. I don't know what they're going to be. But I think there's a very good opportunity to take first or second again here in the group.
Now, remember, though, you have to either win your group outright or you have to be in that wild card for points. And that's how Hartford advanced. They didn't just get it because they were second place. So I do think there's an opportunity for us to at least get wild card out of this. I think we can win the group outright. So I feel good. I think we can at least get back to a semifinal appearance. I don't see why we would not be able to replicate that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good shout. But I mean, honestly, why not go all the way?
I
make it to the final this
year. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. It's always about the teams that we have to go through. Because like Louisville did terrible in the Jägermeister last year, right? Like some teams just did not show up for that tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't watch them day in day out, but I wonder if part of it was like they're like looking at their domination of the league, and they're like, do we need? Maybe they didn't want that distraction.
They could have been playing the boys, right? Like, yeah. I was not paying attention to what Louisville was up to at that time. Okay, fair enough. And then league play, John Morrissey and Backfield have us as 10th in the power rankings. I guess the question is this team one, is it a playoff team, Jason? And two, you know, where I'm not going to ask you for a number because I don't want a prediction later that you got wrong, but where do you think it makes sense to not positionally, but like, is this a home team playoff? Are we going to finally get that this year? Or is this another year of us look on the outside looking in?
This is absolutely a playoff team, right? We've kept a lot of the same pieces again together. And even if we struggle offensively, I think that defense is going to get us far, whether or not, you know, that it becomes painful to watch at times. But, you know, I think there's a good opportunity if the offense can click for this to get a home playoff like birth for us. I'm not going to say like first or second, right? You still expect the Louisville's and the Charlestons to kind of occupy those spaces, but you know, fourth maybe or something. I don't know. I mean, I it's what I want in my heart. So I mean, that's what I'm gonna go for. I want a home playoff
game. You know, I do think there's probably only four teams right now to me that are lock-ins for playoffs. I think that is. Ironically, actually, there's five. I would say it's Lou, Charleston, Pittsburgh, us, and Tampa Bay. I do feel that those five teams will be somewhere within the playoff contention. The questions for me are on the outside, right? Like, where will Birmingham Legion, where will Miami, where will Loudoun finish this year? Loudoun, you know, in the playoffs.
No Ryan Martin, so I don't know what that looks like.
I know that others are very high on it. You know, Sporting and Brooklyn now as expansion sides, like, will they get that Rhode Island FC bump? We didn't see it for Lexington as they came in last season. It didn't work out for them. The magic was kind of just not there at the very end. I'm not confident that this team will be a home team, and I won't be confident until we get to about middle of the season. If we change our fortune again in that first half of the year and we don't play catch up, I think there's a real shot at it. But if we are trying to get into form at the second half of the season and the gap is too wide, like we saw in 2025, that they just could not catch up. You started to see everything click, but it was different from the season prior. I just don't know that they'll get all the way across the finish line. But I do have 100% expectations that this team will make playoffs. Where they land and who that opponent will be and where will it be played is anyone's guess.
You know, I had mentioned that our defense, you know, was incredibly solid, which it was, but do you think we potentially see any sort of regression or maybe plateau improvements?
I don't think a regression because again, we lost Ame and Rio Hope Gun. And while Ame had critical moments and Rio definitely came up in a clutch moment for us during that 25-day contract period, I don't think on the back line we've lost anything that isn't replaceable. And from a CDM perspective or a six pivot in the midline, we still have Ugo Bacharach, who I do believe will be the midfielder in that back line quarterbacking everything, but then we also have Zach, who can play defensively. Clay is a box-to-box guy when he needs to be, so like I'm not worried on a defensive action unless the 3-5-2 is just going to expose us massively to counters if we play the 3-5-2 and not like a 3-4-3. Hamidi Diop, we only had him for what, six games last season. Giving him a full runway of a season, it looks like Frank may be interchangeable, which tells me it's Grant Stoneman paired next to Karifa. Yeah, like I don't think we will do anything. At minimum, it's plateau. But I think considering Stoneman was injured for extended periods, Frank was injured for extended periods, We didn't have Frank, or we didn't have Hugo at the beginning of the season. I think there's going to be an uptick, and I think that's what's going to help spark that early season point accumulation, is we didn't have that same defense online at those first games. Remember how angry we were at all of the stupid goals we were giving, or we were letting in for like set pieces and just dumb mistakes? Like, think of a season where that's not happening, right? Unless Connor's changing his tactics wildly. Like, I think the defense is only going to get better. I don't have a reason to think that they're, other than the injury bug, I don't have a reason. How about you?
Yeah, no, I think there's a very good opportunity that, you know, at least the defense starts strong. But what about the offense? I mean, is it possible to get past the 56 goals we produced in 2024? I mean,
what was it? It was 29 in 2025. I have 56 goals.
I mean, granted, remember one of those games. Really,
how did we score 56 goals in 2024? How did that even happen?
I mean, 8 of those came from from one game.
That's true. Frank Nadarce, yeah. No, okay. I am not convinced that this team has the offensive firepower to surpass 56 goals in 2024. But I do believe, and I said earlier, I think that they have enough goals to, I think they have enough players that if one or two just get into a little bit better form, I think we can get at least midway. So what is that, 30 to almost 60, like 42 goals? I think we can find another 12 goals out of this team for the season. So I'm going to say 42 goals is within striking distance of this. And again, they need to have 42 goals to be a home playoff contender.
Who do you think would be the major kind of goal contributor from our?
I want to say JJ. I mean, JJ, there's no reason to think JJ can't find the back of the net if he can be on the pitch, right? 50% of the playing time, he wasn't available last season. If we can fix that, we can find more goals from JJ. Leo, I think you said too, like, we just assumed like Leo's got to be good for 4 to 6 goals. Maybe he can get double digits now that he's going to have a more prominent role. And I think if Fusan can get at least 6 under him, and maybe Frank gets like 3 or 4, like I think JJ is going to carry the torch, as he should, but I think Leo is going to give him the competition that he needs to be successful in that endeavor.
Last one here. Who replaces Joe Brito as the super sub?
Super sub Joe Brito. That's a good question. Who do you got? I know who's going to probably be relegated to a bench role, but I don't know if he's going to be happy with that. I see a future where AST is a stupendous bench player, like comes in 60th minute, whether it's on the high line or it's in the midline, like just changing the game up.
Do you have to score a goal to be considered a super sub?
I mean,
that's the thing. When I look at AST as a super sub, if that would be his role, could he have goals in his locker? Sure. But is that what you would get out of him?
If we're talking goals, I think the only player that could fit the profile of is Busy. And, you know, Busy started strong, first game, first appearance, scores a goal, and then didn't really find his way. I think this has got to be his make or break year to show the team like what he's there to do. But if we're talking just goals, yeah, I think it's Busy. If we're talking like how he changes the game, I think it could be AST.
All right.
I mean, Zach may be the other super sub. I mean, I still don't know how that all fits in.
With all the different competitions we're in, I mean, there's plenty of room for rotation there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Quick reminder here to join us on 990 WBOB Friday, or today if you're listening not live, as we'll be helping to crush cancer as part of their annual F-Bomb Fridays. You can call the station at 401-310-3943 to swear at us, you know, whatever you want to say to the air. Donations online for good causes, $5 per F-bomb.
Yeah, we'll post all the links. We'll be blasting that all over the socials tomorrow. So if you want to come bug us, it's going to be a great time. It's for a good cause. You guys know us. We don't really ever ask you guys to do much except for listen to us. So if you can help us out by helping them out, that would be an incredible thing. We're going to go on at 7 p.m. Jason will be calling in and swearing at me and others, I think, because he won't be able to make it exactly on time. But nevertheless, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we just thank you all for your listenership, and it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, we'll catch you guys next time. Anchors up.
Anchors up.
In the meantime, make sure to check out our friends at the Blazing Musket for all your New England soccer coverage, including RIFC news at theblazingmusket.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, TikTok, and Blue Sky at RIFC Podcast. Our Instagram handle is @RaisingAnchor, and you can always check out our website, RaisingAnchorPodcast.com. Anchors up.